Welcome, everybody. This is Eva Herr and the Healing of Agape this week. And today we have a very dynamic man named Dr. Joe Esposito. And welcome, Joe, and thank you for coming on today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I certainly appreciate your time.
I have to tell you, I heard you the other day at Life Grocery, and you are a very dynamic man, and you seem to walk your talk.
Yes, I've been doing it for about 25 years now, so this really is true. So,
tell us a little bit about who you are.
Well, my background is I have 5 degrees. I have a degree in chiropractic, I have a degree in orthopedics, I have a degree in pain management, I have a BS in clinical nutrition, 23 certifications in allied health, and I've been in practice for over 2 decades now.
No wonder you sounded like you knew a lot that day.
Done it once or twice before, so.
Well, tell us a little bit about nutrition.
Wow. That's like saying, tell us a little bit about how the earth began.
I know. Give us some highlights there.
It's kind of an interesting question. I've kind of filtered it down because everyone asks the same question. I've been doing radio, television, lectures, and practicing for all these years. And we kind of laugh because if you start listening over and over again, we keep saying the same things over and over again. And whether the topic is male problems, female problems, mental disorders, digestive disorders, living longer, weight loss, I've kind of boiled it down to 3 basic principles that if you follow these principles, you'll live longer, you'll feel better, you'll save a ton of money, you'll enjoy life so much more, and it becomes a lot more fun. And it's easier than anything you're doing right now. That's the best part. It's easier and cheaper. So the rules are very simple. The rules are you want to avoid what we call the 7 deadly sins of nutrition. And those 7 sins are alcohol, meat, sugar, dairy, coffee, soda, and artificial sweetener.
Oh, yes, I totally agree with you on that.
As I say quickly, alcohol, meat, sugar, dairy, coffee, soda, and artificial sweetener. Those are the 7 deadly sins. And if we can start weaning those out of our diet, every one of them contributes to disease processes that occur in the body for different reasons, but they all contribute.
What would some of those diseases, are some of these diseases attached to one of those specific things?
But if we look at any heart disease, cancer, diabetes, high blood pressure, stroke, obesity, all these contribute. For example, alcohol destroys brain cells, and your brain controls everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's 80 trillion cells in your body, and every cell has a nerve that goes from the brain, down the spine, out a nerve to control that organ. So right now, there's a nerve, Eva, that goes to your heart, and your heart's beating. There's a nerve that goes to your lungs, and your lungs breathe. There's a nerve that goes to your pancreas, your spleen, your colon, your gallbladder. Everything is controlled by nerves. So one of the 3 principles that we're going to talk about in a second is make sure the nervous system is healthy. One way we can do that is to avoid alcohol, because alcohol destroys brain cells. And once a brain cell is dead, it's dead forever. And some of us can't afford to lose any brain cells. So.
And they don't replace either, do they?
There's some studies showing that maybe sometimes in certain situations, but generally speaking, no, brain cells don't regenerate, no. And once they're dead forever.
Tell us about aspartame.
Well,
people don't believe that that's as bad as it is. Or NutraSweet or Stevia. I mean, not Stevia. What's that one in the...
Splenda,
yellow packet.
Sucralose, yeah. Yeah, those, when I tell people, I said, of all the 7 deadly sins, what do you think is the worst? And people say meat and sugar and alcohol. Inevitably, no one ever, quote, guesses NutraSweet, which is kind of funny. Because that's really the worst of all of them. When you put aspartame in your body, it has a chemical reaction. It breaks down to 3 components, aspartic acid, phenylalanine, and methyl esters. These 3 components, when they get into the brain, affect your neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters are chemicals in your brain that affect every function. They make you think, they make you feel, they make you happy, they make you sad. And when you put aspartame in your body, the aspartic acid and phenylalanine gets into the brain and lowers what's called your serotonin levels. Serotonin is a chemical in your brain that helps you relax, helps you focus, helps you be calm. And so this is why when we see people, for example, children with attention deficit disorder, we'll give them a drug called a serotonin reuptake inhibitor. What that means is it helps them, quote, utilize their serotonin better. Why are we making them utilize this short supply of serotonin better when we can actually get them to produce enough serotonin?
So it keeps you from producing the serotonin, is that what it is?
It shuts down your serotonin production, yes. Not totally, but somewhat, yes.
Would that make you be depressed, too?
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
Yeah, the Food and Drug Administration has 92 side effects listed for aspartame ingestion.
Makes you wonder why they let it go out, doesn't it?
Well, I have a real strong feeling that it's not going to be around for very long. You're even starting to see some of the big companies start to pull away from using aspartame and switching over to sucralose.
Well, what about Splenda? Is that any different?
Well, that's sucralose. And that's, gosh, how do I say this delicately? It's not as bad, but it's still really bad. It's like arsenic versus a knife. You know, they'll both kill you.
Mm-hmm.
The Splenda, when it gets into your body, stimulates your estrogen receptor sites. Estrogen,
what does that mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. Estrogen receptor sites make your body think that it has a lot more estrogen than it does. And estrogen is a growth hormone. It causes abnormal cell growth.
Oh, okay.
So it's bad for different reasons, but it's still very bad. And we're starting to see lots of links to depression, anxiety, weight gain, things like that, all being linked to, clinically, to Splenda, or sucralose is the chemical name for it.
What about digestion problems? Does it affect that at all?
Digestion problems is such a biggie. And it's interesting. For all the patients we've seen in my clinic, I personally in my clinic have seen over 20,000 patients. And after
I can tell why. You have the energy to do it.
Yeah, oh, it's great. this is my fun. And when a patient gets to know you, they start to trust you, and then they'll start to mention, you know, doc, I got really bad gas. Or, you know, when I go to the bathroom, it is not a pleasant situation. Or I'm constipated, or I have diarrhea. People don't talk about these things, like when they first meet you, of course. But it's interesting, when I get to know people, I would probably say 8 out of 10 of my patients would say they have some type of digestion disorder.
And why is that usually, do you think?
Well, it's two issues we have to look at. One of the issues is chemical, bad diet. The other one, and this is so ignored, and I wish, gosh, if I had one wish, you know, if I had that one magical wish, that the healthcare profession would look at the body as a physical being and not only a chemical being. What I find on a regular basis is people have digestive problems because their stomach or their colon or the valves in their colon are spasmed. And when a valve spasms, or the stomach spasms, it can, like, for example, the stomach can push up against the diaphragm, and that can cause a condition commonly known as a hiatal hernia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, medically, sometimes we call it non-ulcerative dyspepsia, where the stomach it just isn't working right. And you can take all the pills in the world. You can take digestive enzymes. You can take herbs. You can take the little purple pills, the medical approach, until you physically massage the stomach back to its normal position and get it to relax. The stomach will never work normally.
Do you notice any correlation between specific emotional disorders and specific diseases?
That ties so perfectly into digestion. Now, follow me on this, and if I lose you, Eva, please stop me, because I want to make sure the listeners understand this. When you swallow food, it goes into your stomach. Your stomach breaks the food down and passes it into your small intestine. At that first part of the small intestine, that's where proteins get broken down into what's called amino acids. And amino acids are what we call the building blocks. They're the raw material for everything. They create cells, they create eye tissue, muscle tissue, heart tissue, toenails, but they also produce neurotransmitters, those chemicals in your brain that make you think.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we're breaking down our proteins into amino acids, the amino acids can go out to the cells and build muscle mass and keep the body healthy. The last place to get these amino acids is what we call the higher cortical function, your brain. And so if you have digestive disorders, gas, bloating, diarrhea, constipation, acid reflux, many times you're not breaking down enough proteins to produce amino acids to eventually produce neurotransmitters, and then we start to see the emotional connection to a physical problem, the digestive disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And if we talk to people that have emotional disorders, whether it's hyperactivity, bipolar, anxiety, they usually have a couple of things in common. Number one, they're ticklish.
Really?
Yeah, because they're protecting, they usually ticklish right around their midsection. They're protecting their abdominal area. That's the digestive system that isn't working properly. So your body goes into defense mode to protect that area. The second thing is, and pardon me for talking about digestion again and gas, but they have really stinky bowels because the proteins aren't being broken down properly and the proteins putrefy in the colon. They rot.
Mm-hmm.
When they rot in the colon, when they finally get out of the body, they don't smell real pretty.
Now, would that be because they're eating dead animals or the wrong kind of proteins or mixtures of foods, or what would that be? Actually, what would they do to fix that?
It's actually both. Because if we're eating animal protein is very, very difficult to digest. And especially cooked animal protein, which is how you should eat your animal protein if you're going to eat it, very difficult to break down. If you look at a true carnivore, let's say a lion or a tiger or a dog or a cat, they don't chew their food. They swallow it whole. And they sleep about 20 hours a day. The reason they're sleeping 20 hours a day is because it takes so much energy to break down the proteins. A carnivore has about 1,100% more hydrochloric acid in their stomach than we humans do. So they can eat meat. They can eat rotten meat sometimes. They can eat raw meat, swallow it whole. The acid breaks it down. They sleep while the body digests it. Then they pass it out relatively quickly. It takes 72 hours from time in to time out for a piece of meat in a human being.
Really?
Yes. Now, in 72 hours, that meat will rot.
That's disgusting.
It is very disgusting.
So what should they do?
Well, first thing I recommend, of course, is start cutting back on your animal proteins, meats and dairy products, because we don't have the digestive system to break them down. We can't get proper nutrients from them over the long term. We do have a digestive system that is designed to break down fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts, and seeds. And so we want to make sure that we chew our vegetables especially and chew all our foods. And our body is designed perfectly to digest fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts, and seeds. It's not designed to digest animal proteins.
I guess that's why it's important to eat raw and living foods.
Yes. It was interesting. I was watching the news last week, and they had a special National Geographic. They sent out experts to find out where people live the longest life expectancy, and what common denominator is there. And they found three groups. One was in Okinawa, living on an island. One was a mountainous tribe that lived up in the mountains. I think it was in Russia, if I remember correctly. And one was a group in California. Now, what could these three groups possibly have in common? Well, the one thing that they found that they all have in common is that they eat a plant-based diet. They avoid animal proteins, and they eat a plant-based diet. So whether you're in Okinawa or you're in the mountains or if you're living in California, and it was a Seventh-day Adventist group that they found in California, mm-hmm. they live an average of 10 years longer than the, quote, normal American, and they live healthy.
I would imagine. What would you suggest someone to do for heart disease?
Well, heart disease is a biggie because most heart disease is self-induced. There is some genetic involvement, but generally speaking, heart disease is self-induced, and that means we did it ourselves. And we know if you follow the American Heart Association's recommendations, or the American Cancer Society, or the American Dietetics Association, or the Dietitians of Canada, they all agree that a healthy diet is a plant-based diet, and it can, quote, reduce or eliminate many common diseases. Wow. This is the American Dietetic Association speaking. This is the Dietitians of Canada speaking. This is the Heart Association, the American Cancer Society. They're all agreeing on one thing, that a plant-based diet is the best way to go to help reduce or eliminate disease. So if everybody agrees, and it's rare that in health profession everybody agrees, if everybody agrees that this is a safe diet, to me logic says, why don't we just make this our diet? And so everybody's stuck. Well, food, meat tastes good. There was a great book written a while ago called Breaking Food Seduction by Neil Barnard. And in the book, it basically breaks down into a very simple area. Neil Barnard, great medical doctor, medical researcher, says that there are four foods that stimulate your opiate receptor sites, the part of your brain that gives you pleasure. And those four foods are meat, sugar, dairy, and chocolate. And when you eat meat, sugar, dairy, and chocolate, you're getting high. Getting stoned.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, you understand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many of us can
eat those comfort foods?
Yeah, comfort. That's good. Very good. It's comfort food. And so if we eat a little bit of this food, we stimulate our opiate receptor sites. We start getting high, start feeling good. So what do we want to do? eat more? How many people can eat one bite of meat? How many of us can have a small piece of chocolate?
Not me.
Not me. Yeah, not most.
Well, another prevalent issue today is with men and prostate cancer.
Yes.
What are your suggestions about that?
Well, that's a biggie because, you know, that I'm in my mid-40s now, and I'm starting to see my friends start to develop old people's diseases. High blood pressure, impotence, prostate problems, cancer. And I look at them and I think, you're only in your mid-40s. Well, you're in your 50s. And now, I mean, that's the time to start developing disease. Mm-hmm. Prostate cancer is multifaceted. Several things we want to look at if prostate cancer is an issue. Number one is we want to avoid the foods that have growth hormones in them. This goes for all cancer. Because growth hormones cause abnormal cell growth. Abnormal cell growth is cancer.
Which would be meat and milk and what else?
Soy has some of it. If you're going to eat soy, eat organic soy and eat a little bit of it. Your body can handle a little bit of it. But meats and dairy products are loaded with growth hormones, estrogen-like compounds. But another place that we get exposed to when it comes to estrogen-like compounds is plastic.
Oh, of course.
When we eat plastic, and I know you're thinking you don't eat plastic, but how do we get plastic into our diets? We can scrape a plastic container. Let's assume we got some Chinese food to go and it's in a styrofoam container. If you scrape the bottom, you're getting a chemical in your body called xenoestrogen. That's X-E-N-O, estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
Xenoestrogens are about 300 times stronger than human estrogen. Estrogen, we talked about, causes growth.
And I guess heating stuff in a microwave and using those non-stick skillets.
Absolutely. The microwave is such a biggie. When I talk to people about this, they always look at me like a deer in the headlights. When you put plastic in a microwave, the microwave causes these chemicals to be released into the food. Even if it says microwave safe, you're still running the risk of putting this plastic compound, the xenoestrogen, into your food.
Mm-hmm.
If you do use glass in the microwave and you cover it with plastic, you run the risk of releasing these chemicals into your food. My feeling is very clear. Don't use microwaves.
Of course, electromagnetic energy is on top of that as
right,
well.
Right, exactly. So just, actually, I have to tell you, Eva, there is a use for microwaves. I found a very good use for microwaves. At the end of the day, when you've done washing your dishes and your sponge is all wet and dirty from wiping down the counters,
yeah,
take your sponge and put it in the microwave for 2 minutes. And then walk away. Make sure you're out of the room when the microwave's running. In case it's leaking. And what's going to happen is, the microwaves themselves will kill the little germs and boogeymen that live in your sponge, germs, viruses, bacteria. And the microwaves are so high energy that they'll literally cause these things to burst. It'll cook them to death. And so it's very sanitary to use a sponge in a microwave, but that's the only thing I would ever put in a microwave.
Which I guess would mean that if it cooks that, it's going to cook your brain if you're standing nearby.
Exactly.
Now, there's something... You don't know much about me, but I'm a medical intuitive, and so I want to ask you some things because I'm still learning. I only got my gift about 2 years ago. It just kind of came overnight one night. So I'm still learning, and so when I get somebody like you, I want to ask questions. And one of the things that I've found when I do readings on people, if they have prostate issues, is they have lack of nurturing issues as a child. Does that resonate with you at all?
Well, that resonates... Lack of nurturing issues are important, I think, for everything. And prostate issues certainly can be because it is it's a reproductive organ, so it's our sex organ. And, you know, if we look at the cosmic world, we've got to make sure that we're nurtured and we're taken care of so that we can then take care of others.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can certainly reflect down into the prostate. The other thing I want to discuss, too, is we said there were three issues if we kind of boil down health. Is stay away from alcohol, meat, sugar, dairy, coffee, soda, and artificial sweeteners. Eat fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts, and seeds, which, by the way, there's 120,000 fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts, and seeds that my patients jokingly say are Dr. Joe approved. So there's 120,000 foods to eat. There's plenty of foods. And the third thing, we talked on it briefly, is the physical aspect of the body. The brain sends messages down the spine, out the nerve, to every part of the body. And men traditionally can be more active when they're young. They'll play football and have more manual labor type jobs,
mm-hmm,
and they can injure their low backs. If a bone in the low back twists out of place, it can pinch a nerve. And if you're pinching a nerve in the low back, that nerve controls your colon, your sex organs, and your bladder.
Really?
Yes. So if you have a pinched nerve in the low back, it may be the reason why the prostate isn't working properly, because we're pinching a nerve to the prostate. We can massage and stimulate and put radioactive isotopes in the prostate all day, but until you open up the nerve supply to the prostate cannot heal properly.
Now, how would you repair that?
Well, that's where chiropractic steps in. You'd want to find a qualified chiropractor who knows what they're doing and find out if there's any bones out of alignment and put them back in place.
Now,
it doesn't necessarily have to hurt either, the back, because people say, well, my back doesn't hurt, so I guess I'm fine. 80% of our nerves don't feel pain.
What would someone do if they had a bulging disc? Is there something they can do? But so many people have that.
Bulging discs are so, so common. And what happens is if the bones move out of place, there's little pads in between the bones called discs. The discs can become inflamed. Just like if you sprain your ankle, it swells up. If you twist the bones, the disc swells up. And if the disc swells up, it can pinch a nerve. If we pinch a nerve, 20% of the nerves feel pain, 80% of the nerves don't feel pain. So you can feel pain and have a pinched nerve, but you can also not feel pain and have a pinched nerve. That's why you want to get a quality checkup on your spine, just like you get your teeth checked and your eyes checked and your car checked and your air conditioner checked. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, if the bones are out of alignment, the discs can swell. Putting the bones back in alignment and doing the proper therapy, most cases, can bring that swelling down. And once the swelling comes down, the disc no longer is bulging.
Can you do that in one session, or does that take a couple of things?
It usually takes several. Yeah, it's usually several treatments to realign the body and get it to stay there.
Okay. So tell us about the immune system. I mean, if you have a healthy immune system, that can fix so many things.
That's like a 2-hour workup here. But the immune system it controls every other aspect. Everything controls everything. So I guess I can't say one's more important than the other. But the immune organs are your lymph glands, your thymus, which is underneath your breastbone, your spleen. And you have to make sure these organs are working properly. And so step number one is you want to make sure the nerve supply going to the organs are working. That's making sure you don't have any pinched nerves. And number two, you want to make sure you keep the proper nutrition going into the body. So with cold and flu season coming up on us, it's coming up on fall here, let me give a little bit of advice. Okay? When we have viruses get into our body, viruses like to eat vitamin C. They enjoy vitamin C. They gobble it up. So what happens is you've heard people say take mega doses of vitamin C. Well, what's a mega dose? How much does a mega dose consist of? What I want you to do is this. If you start feeling a little under the weather, or if you just want to do this as a prophylactic measure, take 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. This is what I do. I'm not prescribing over the radio, of course, so I'd cover my fanny there legally. But what I do is I'll take 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C 4 times a day. So every 4 hours about, I'll take 1,000 milligrams. Right, 4 times a day. So spread it out, 1,000 milligrams. So you have 4,000 milligrams at the end of the day. If you start to get diarrhea, or you start to get loose stools, you've gotten what's called your bowel tolerance. Cut back to 75% of that, and that's how much vitamin C you should take every day. That gives enough vitamin C to feed you and your immune system and the viruses.
Okay.
Because many times if you're just taking a vitamin C, you're feeding the viruses, there may not be any left for your body.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, you're doing the wrong thing there.
Sense.
If you can do 4,000 milligrams a day, or 4,000 milligrams, okay, or 4 grams, the next day I want you to have 2 grams or 2,000 milligrams for in the morning, and then 1,000, 1,000, 1,000. If everything's cool with the bowels, then I want you to have 2,000 the next day, 2,000, 2,000, 1,000, 1,000. And eventually you'll get to the point where you start getting loose stools. When you get that, that's your bowel tolerance. Cut back to 75% of that, and that's how much vitamin C you should take every day.
Okay, so go slowly again and tell us those dosages.
Sure. 1,000 milligrams 4 times a day for the first day.
Okay.
Then 2,000 to start the day, the next day, and then 1,000, 1,000, 1,000.
That's 5,000, right?
Right, that's 5,000, right.
Okay.
The next day, you're going to take 2,000, your first dose, 2,000, your second dose, and then 1,000 and 1,000.
Okay.
By now, you should be having your bowel tolerance. If not, you just continue then 2,000, 2,000, 2,000, and 1,000. Until you get to the point where you start getting loose stools, cut back to 75% of that, and that's going to help prevent, and if you do get sick, help reverse the damage that viruses are causing in your body.
So do you do this every day from now on, or just when you start getting sick?
I do it. I take about 1,000 a day, milligrams a day. But when I start feeling under the weather, as soon as I start feeling it, I start loading up on that vitamin C and jump right into this.
What about, speaking about getting under the weather, about fatigue?
Ah, boy.
I have that problem a lot.
Yes. I do a lot of corporate workshops and seminars. Corporations call me in. And one of the seminars that we do that they just love is increasing the quality. It's called peak performance and increasing the quality of your life. And companies love this because if we can get their employees working better and more efficiently, well, it's better for the company. Employees love it because they work better and efficiently, so they enjoy their job and they enjoy their lives more. So everybody wins and nobody loses. That's a good deal.
That's
so,
cool.
Yeah, we teach that, and fatigue is such a big issue. And when I lecture to schools and teachers, I'll say, when are children's grades better, morning or afternoon? Always they say morning. What changes between morning and afternoon? They have lunch. And so often the junk that we're feeding people at lunch is getting them tired. And if you're in the working world, ask yourself this question, when do I feel better, morning or afternoon? The answer is going to be morning in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have for lunch has a dramatic impact on how we feel and how we function for the rest of the day. So what we want to do is we want to avoid those seven deadly sins at lunch, alcohol, meat, sugar, dairy, coffee, soda, artificial sweetener, and eat smaller, or not even smaller, but lighter meals, meals that aren't so laden with saturated fats and sugars, and then you'll find you have the same energy when you wake up in the morning that you have throughout the day, and you don't have to be loading yourself up with coffee and caffeine drinks and other stimulants.
Now, does it matter whether the food's cooked or not?
Absolutely. Raw food is going to give you a lot more energy than cooked food. Cooked food robs your body of nutrients to help digest it. Raw food gives you nutrients. So the more raw food you eat, the better off you're going to be.
And how would that? What about depression? Because so many people that are fatigued also get depression.
Well, anxiety, fatigue, and depression all kind of start to fall into the same group, I find. And with depression, one thing we have to check is the digestive system. Are they breaking down their proteins properly in order to get the neurotransmitters to make them capable of feeling happy, of feeling pleasure? So step number one is we want to make sure the digestive system is working. Step number two is we want to start increasing the endorphin levels. And we do that by exercise. Now, I don't like exercising.
I don't either.
Right. So what can we do? Walking is excellent. If you walk fast, you're getting the same benefits as if you were running. Cardiovascular, muscular, the muscles contract, which pump your lymph glands, which flush out the lymph glands, which allow them to filter out viruses and germs better. It helps the immune system. So walking is an excellent source of exercise.
Now, I notice also that you do work on carpal tunnel and such problems as that. What would you do to fix that?
Well, having a background in chiropractic and orthopedics, we started finding that carpal tunnel, you know, oftentimes we'll put people in wrist braces and we'll operate on their wrists and do carpal tunnel surgery, and people weren't getting very good results generally on carpal tunnel surgery and had a very high failure rate. So we started doing some further research, and we found that oftentimes the problem is not in the wrist. You're getting a pinched nerve either from your neck, your shoulder, or your elbow, and that's the nerve that goes down into your hand. And so just like if you hit your funny bone, you get numbness in your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a pinched, what's called a median nerve, in your elbow or your shoulder, and that can be causing wrist pain.
So if you get chiropractic treatments, you can sometimes fix carpal tunnel.
In many cases, chiropractic and massage, you massage the muscles, set the shoulder back into place, adjust the neck, set the elbow back in place, set the wrist back in place, and then the carpal tunnel gets better.
You know, another thing a lot of people have is pain across the top of their shoulders.
Yeah.
What do you do about that?
I call that computer syndrome. We
yeah.
sit at the computer all day, and your head weighs about 8 pounds, which is the size of a bowling ball. So we all have a pretty big head. And if you're sitting properly at a computer, and your screen is high, up high, it should be level with your eyes. The top of the screen of your computer should be level with your forehead, so that you're not looking down at your screen. In fact, it's better to look up a little bit than it is to look down a little bit. As we start to look down, we start watching our fingers type, our head starts to droop. And that puts pressure on the spine and the nerves in the upper part of your back. And when you pinch it up in there, you get that pain across your shoulder. So what do? You stretch. You'll take some painkillers, muscle relaxers, Aaron-type compounds, ibuprofen. They do nothing but cover up the pain. They don't fix the problem. So what we want to...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Now what we want to do is go in there and fix the problem so that the pain goes away, not just cover up the pain itself.
Does your pillow matter in that?
Pillows are a big player. And I had a pillow I used for years and years and years, and I thought I loved it. Then I went and got myself a really high-end pillow. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm paying $100 for a pillow. This is insane. And I tell you what, it makes all the difference in the world. And we have special...
Go ahead.
And we have special pillows here that we have with our patients that we train the neck to go back into a normal curve and drop the head back. And then once we get the body trained on these special pillows, then we switch them over to a regular pillow.
How would you want your head to lay on the pillows?
Ideally, you'd like your head, if you're laying on your back, you want to put a curve in your neck. So you can roll up a towel, or we have the special pillows here to put right in your neck so your neck actually curves backwards a little bit. And that's the best position for your neck to be in.
Okay. Does it matter if you lay on your side?
I end up on my side a lot when I sleep. And sleeping on your side, you want to make sure that the pillow is wide enough to keep your head in line with your spine. You don't want too many pillows pushing your head up or too small a pillow, which is going to push your head down. You want to try to keep the head in line with your spine when you're laying on your side.
Okay, I want to ask one more question, then I want to talk about your book.
Okay.
Morton's Neuroma. So many people have that.
Yes.
And foot problems. And if you have a foot problem, you know, it ruins your whole day.
Uh-huh.
What do you do about that?
About a year ago, one of the big utility companies came to me, and I had done some training with them. I'd done a lot of training with them in the past, and they said, Dr. Joe, we want you to do a seminar on foot safety. And I looked at the director, and I said, you've got to be kidding. You know how boring that seminar is going to be? He said, Dr. Joe, you can make anything exciting. I want a seminar on foot safety. And I thought, well, you're paying the bill. I'll do what you want. And it turned out to be one of my most popular lectures. Some things we want to look at with the feet. The feet support everything. And you need to have an arch in your foot because arches create flexibility and strength. So you want to make sure that you have a normal arch in your foot. So an exercise that I recommend if you have any type of foot problems, like Morton's Neuroma, plantar fasciitis, or just feet hurt, get a golf ball. It has little dimples in it. Sit down, put the golf ball under your foot, and roll the golf ball under your foot with pretty hard pressure, covering all aspects of your foot. It's going to massage your foot and break up a lot of spasms and fibrous scar tissue that can be forming in the foot.
Okay.
The other reason that's good is this. There's a healing technique called reflexology. And reflexology states that on the bottom of your foot are trigger points that correlate to all the parts of your body. And if a part of your body isn't working right, you have to massage that part of your foot to stimulate that part of your body. For example, your sinuses are at the tip of your feet. Your colon is in the middle of the foot. Your heart's down there. Your liver, your spleen, your gallbladder. They all have different points. So if you're going to be massaging your foot with a golf ball, those little dimples are going to massage all these little reflexology points and stimulate every organ in your body. So
that's
that
amazing.
Little golf ball exercise is great. It's so simple. And it's basically free. You've got to buy a golf ball. So
it's amazing. So you have a book out, or how many books do you have out?
Yes, my first book is called Eating Right for the Health of It. And I don't know how, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we put that book out. And I wanted something that was so simple and so easy, that was a simple guide to changing the way we eat. And so the first half of the book talks about how to change your diet. Not so much why to change your diet, but how. What do you do if you have children? What if you do if you're addicted to coffee?
What do you do if you have children that won't eat anything?
That's a good point. I have she's just over 1 year old. She's 13 months old now. And what we found was the more food you introduce to her on a daily basis, the more food she's going to eat. And then studies have also correlated with that the more food a child is introduced to, the easier they're going to be to feed.
Well, what if you have one that's like 11 or 12 that's already set in their ways?
That's kind of tough. What you want to do is have available a lot of good foods in the house and don't have the bad foods. The trick
if
I was
they starve themselves, that's what I find with my daughter. She just starves herself.
Ah. Well, find out something she does like. I have patients all the time say, well, I don't like fruit. I won't eat any fruit. And I'll say, any fruit? Well, I like bananas. Okay? I want you to have a banana every day. Well, I like watermelon, too. Okay. So would there be a problem if you had bananas and watermelon? Well, no, I like them. So try to find what good foods they do like and make them available.
A logical thing,
yes. But the secret really is not to have the bad food around. Because if you have cookies and you have organic avocados, I'm going to bet you a dollar that most kids are going to go for the cookies and not the organic avocados.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a fruit book, apples, peaches, pears, bananas, pineapples, mangoes, kiwis, star fruit, watermelon, and that's available, and they see you eating it, the odds are that they're going to eat it as well. I don't like grapes. Well, then don't eat grapes. Oh, well, that was pretty easy. my daughter, we make a smoothie every morning for her. And we put bananas and berries in it, and then we'll add a lot of things to it. For example, I have a line of supplements called Essential Source that I've invented. And Essential Source is concentrated fruits in a pill and concentrated vegetables in a pill. And so what I do is I'll take out my food processor, or we have a thing called a Vitamix. I'll drop a couple of the pills in there and grind them into a powder instantly. Then I'll make the smoothie right in the blender, and she's getting all the concentrated fruits and vegetables right in there.
That makes me feel so stupid. You know, why don't I think about that?
It's not stupid. You just haven't learned it yet. So it's just that simple. If they won't swallow the pill, there's a lot of good powdered foods. I mean, I like my Essential Source because it's 18 different types of fruits and 18 different types of vegetables.
Where would you buy that?
If you go to my website, drjoeesposito.com, that's drjoeesposito.com, I have a lot of lectures and radio shows that I've done in the past archived there. You could listen to anyone you like. We've got over 100 topics covered. Click on articles. There's a lot of articles I've written. And if you click on products, we have information on my book, which we'll talk about in a second, and also on the Essential Source as well.
Okay.
So the book is great because the first half of the book covers how to change your diet. And the second half, people said, well, what do you eat? In fact, I even have a tape available called So What Can I Eat? And there's some tapes available there on the website as well. And it's 202 of my favorite recipes. And if you were going to come to my house, this is what I eat.
And that's available on your website,
that's
too?
On the website as well, yeah.
Okay.
And it's a great, and everything in there is real simple to make. Because when I looked at different types of books, plant-based books and health food books, and I looked at the directions on so many recipes, and by the way, the book is an award winner, they got too confusing for me. Gosh, you got to get this, you got to sit this overnight, and then you got to puree this. And I want something simple. I want to know when I come home from work, in 20 minutes I can make a meal. Everything in there except one is going to take less than a half hour.
Well, that certainly sounds like a good solution to me.
Easy, simple, delicious, too. Everything has to be tasty or else it's not going to pass my approval. I'm Italian.
These raw things or cooked things?
Some are raw. I do have some raw recipes. I have ice cream, pies, cakes, soups, salad dressings. But I have a lot of cooked things as well.
Okay. Now, what about your second book?
Second book isn't out yet. It's called The 7 Lifestyle Habits of Incredibly Healthy People.
Will you give us a view on that?
Oh, yes. I'll keep you posted on that. Because everyone wants it simple. You know, no matter how much we talk, it breaks down to stay away from alcohol, meat, sugar, dairy, coffee, soda, and artificial sweetener. Eat more fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts, and seeds. And make sure your spine is healthy. Make sure your spine and nervous system are functioning normally. That's the game.
What about, you touched on ADD earlier. I mean, every kid in this school practically now is allegedly diagnosed with ADD.
Uh-huh.
I don't believe that.
Isn't it amazing? Well, I ask the mothers always, and mothers, they almost cry when I say this. I said, let me tell you a little bit about your child. I don't know your child. I don't even know if it's a boy or a girl. But number one, they're ticklish. They go, yeah. And number two, they got really stinky stools. And they'll go, well, yeah, they are. Everyone answers the same way. And if you go to my website, I have an article on attention deficit disorder. It's called ADD. It's not a Ritalin deficiency. That's how we seem to treat it.
I'm going to laugh.
Well, you must be deficient in Ritalin. Here, take more.
the Ritalin thing that makes you have tics and do funny things with your body.
And we don't know what's going to happen in the next 20 years on these Ritalin kids. So, number one, we showed to mothers in the article how to massage the stomach. It's a real simple massage technique. And then we want to make sure we don't give them foods that are stimulants, what we call excitotoxins. And those excitotoxins are artificial sweeteners and monosodium glutamate. And in my book, I have a whole chapter on monosodium glutamate and where it's hidden in your foods. It has over 40 different names.
Really?
Same product, monosodium glutamate. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm. It is.
So we
it's
want to
amazing that it's there and that the government allows it to be put in there like that.
Well, you know, the government allows cigarettes to be on the market. I mean, even the cigarette companies are now saying there is no safe cigarette. Even light cigarettes are not safe. Well, then why are they on the market? Why are they still there if even the cigarette companies are putting out commercials saying there's no such thing as a safe cigarette? And yet, we still sell them every day.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't get it. And I'm all for free enterprise. I think free enterprise is excellent. But, you know, I don't understand it. You know, why are there so many good foods? There was a supplement called tryptophan that was taken off the market several years ago. Tryptophan was great. If you had trouble sleeping, you took tryptophan. Great. Normalized the neurotransmitters in the brain. Help you sleep better. It was taken off the market because one person died from taking a bad batch that was shipped from Japan. Taken off the market.
Now that you've brought that up, sleeping disorders, what can you recommend for that?
Breathing is so important when it comes to sleep, and so many of us don't breathe properly. So I strongly suggest if you have a sleeping disorder that you take a yoga class. Yoga classes teach proper breathing. I'd love to show you how to breathe. I can't do that over the radio, though. But the other thing, there are some natural things that really help with sleep disorders. My grandmother used to give me chamomile tea. Well, studies have shown in the past 40 years that chamomile tea does help, in fact, induce good sleep. So chamomile tea would be a good choice. Bananas.
Yeah, valerian and melatonin.
Excellent. They all work very well without the side effects. I was at a conference last month here in Atlanta, and the speaker was talking about different types of sleep disorders, and he was talking about how this drug causes people to hallucinate, and this drug causes mental problems, and this drug can speed up your heart rate. Well, then why are you even selling these drugs? Bananas work very well. Bananas can help produce tryptophan, which will help you sleep. Potatoes. Here's a little experiment for the listeners. If you have trouble sleeping, I want you to have a potato dinner. Baked potatoes, mashed potatoes, no dairy products. You can use rice milk or almond milk or cashew milk. There's a lot of butter substitutes in health food stores that are excellent.
So you wouldn't even use natural butter?
No, I don't do any dairy products.
Okay.
And have a baked potato, not French fries, but, you know, baked or boiled potatoes. And notice how good you sleep. You'll be amazed.
I'm going to try that tonight.
Works great. And it was interesting, when my baby was breastfeeding, when her mother would have potatoes, 12 hours later when it would come through the breast milk, the baby would sleep better.
Well, that reminds me of something, too. When I was pregnant, I had this thing called restless leg syndrome.
Yes.
I'm sure there are more people than just me. What on earth would you do about that?
It's usually due to one of two things. Number one is it's a pinched nerve in the low back because the messages from the brain can't get to the leg. And oftentimes, as you're pregnant, the baby grows, and that puts pressure on your low back, which causes the bones to move out of place, which pinch the nerves that go to the legs. The second thing, you have to start looking at your calcium-magnesium intake, and usually magnesium more so than calcium. So a magnesium supplement in a case like that oftentimes solves that problem.
What would someone take?
Whatever the bottle says. It depends on the potency. But I would just follow the directions on a bottle of the magnesium.
And I guess it would be important to take natural supplements as opposed to laboratory pharmaceutical supplements.
Well, that's so important because, I mean, I'm bombarded by people selling multi-level marketing products all the time. And I tell them very politely, I already have a job. I'm very happy with my job. thank you very much. I will come speak to your group, though, if you want me to. And I've spoken to a lot. I mean, if I get a chance to talk to somebody, I'm going to talk to them. So what happens is you'll hear the words pharmaceutical grade. That scares me. I don't want anything that has pharmaceutical in the title, you know?
I absolutely agree.
If I can avoid them, I'm going to avoid pharmaceuticals at all costs. So you want to get whole food supplements. Concentrated fruits, concentrated vegetables, in the natural state. When you start isolating out nutrients, they don't work as well as they do when they're with their brothers and sisters in the whole food.
I just have to ask, remind people of this too. There's legislation out there right now called Codex.
Oh, yeah.
Our supplements are going to be taken away soon if we don't do something.
Yes, we're fighting tooth and nail on Codex. We're making real good progress on that, too, I may say. So all the folks out there that have joined our battle in Codex, yay for you. But it's one of these things that the public does never heard of. What is Codex?
Well, you know, it passed the Senate 54 to 45 on July the 1st.
Yes. But
so now they're just waiting on the House.
Yeah, I'm hoping that all our battles, and we're winning, we won a big battle in New Mexico just recently. I'm hoping that we can beat it in the House, and that it's not going to be as bad as it looks, because the way it reads right now is that basically you can't have any therapeutic grade supplements being sold. And there's only going to be a few supplements that you could even buy at all. And so I'm hoping that we defeat that, because that's just insanity.
I just can't believe the people are doing it to their own families.
Well, you know, one of the largest groups of people that don't vaccinate their children are the medical profession.
Really?
Yes. So, you know, it's not necessarily saying, well, they're doing it to their own families. A famous guy once said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." And that's very true. You know, so I don't know
if it's that or money, Joe.
Well, it has to do with money, too. But I had a very famous doctor here in Atlanta die recently. He was a cancer doctor, and he died of a heart attack. He was walking with his wife, and he dropped dead. And from what I gathered from the information, and I don't have all the facts on this, but he was taking a cholesterol-lowering drug. And cholesterol-lowering drugs can affect your body's ability to produce a thing called coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10 causes muscles to contract. And so many times if you're taking one of these drugs,
your heart stops.
Isn't that amazing?
You know, and I've heard that coenzyme Q10 can actually reverse congestive heart failure, yet they don't tell you that.
Yes, exactly.
They put you on pharmaceuticals. I can't figure that out for the life of me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know why, if you're going to take these cholesterol-lowering drugs, why don't they just don't say, take coenzyme Q10?
What about glycoproteins? Are you familiar with those?
Yes, the glyconutrients, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very familiar with them, and they seem to work very well. I took them for a while, and I got a horrible headache from them and got all dizzy and dopey from them. But they seem to work very well. But again, all the advice we can give on the supplements goes back to one simple thing. Make sure you're eating a good diet. Fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts, and seeds, because all the glyconutrients, everything, magnesium, calcium, everything we've talked about is right there. It's all in your fruits and vegetables. And then, in addition to eating a good diet, then you can start supplementing. But you really got to get that good diet going, and that's real important.
Well, we're about to wind up here. If there was one thing that you could tell people, I know it's going to be watch your diet, but are there particular supplements or particular things that they should do, what would that be?
Well, right away, you want to start eating more fruits and vegetables, and the big advice is get the bad food out of the house. Okay, make sure you get the bad food out of the house, because if it's in the house and you already eat bad food, you're going to keep eating it. You know, I took my mom on a cruise a while ago, and she was looking at the fat people going to the buffets, and she's looking at the skinny people going to the buffets. And she said to me, she said, "You know what, Joseph? Fat people eat fat foods." And I said, "They sure do. There's a reason why we're fat. We eat bad foods." So advice number one is always get the bad food out of the house. Advice number two, make sure you drink plenty of water, 8 to 10 glasses of reverse osmosis or distilled water a day, and get moving. A real neat little trick I do with my patients, I'll put a pedometer on their belt, and I'll say, "I want you taking 10,000 steps every day." And that's your goal. Shoot for 10,000 steps every day. And if that means parking far away in the mall and walking, great. If that means taking the stairs instead of the elevator, great. But we can do 10,000 steps a day, cut back on the alcohol, meat, sugar, dairy, coffee, soda, and artificial sweetener, eat more fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts, and seeds, and make sure that the spine and the nervous system are working properly, because that controls everything. Now we've got a program for health instead of just shotgunning.
Well, it sounds like what we all need, Dr. Joe. And for any of you out there that need somebody to walk with, I'm sure Dr. Joe and I could rent out our toddlers for you to
take. Oh, anyone can take my little daughter Julia anytime they want. She'll wear you out.
Well, listen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank
I really do appreciate you. You've been a great enlightenment on this topic.
And if anybody needs to get in touch with me, just go to drjoeesposito.com and everything's right there for you.
Agape, Dr. Joe, and thank you so much.
Thanks, Eva. I appreciate your time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program. And we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.